people tend to put craftspeople or artists into a box. They'll go, oh, he's a leather worker, or he's a painter, or he's a sculptor.
Yeah.
But if they actually scratch below the top layer of paint, they might just find that that person they're talking about is a sculptor, leather worker, painter, wood carver. It's just that they're chosen to work at this stage in leather. Well, that's was how it was with me. Leather's in the chosen material. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught him yet. 'Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky. All the horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry.
What's your favourite material to work with out of all the leathers?
Yeah, that's a harsh one. I do like kangaroo. Kangaroo leather, especially the vegetable tan kangaroo leather. It's very, very strong. It's quite thin.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's as the mood takes me.
Right.
Because I sort of don't so much think of what's my favourite leather, it's what's going to do this job the best.
Got it, yeah.
How can I make this job better? Even my helmets, I mean, I've been doing those for 20 years now. Mm. And I've kept the first one I made just to keep my feet on the ground.
Well, to see how far you've come?
Yeah.
Or? Yeah.
But I keep changing. Like, there's little tweaks that I do as I'm going in a different parts of the construction of them, I change.
Mm.
I think, oh, would this work better? So you try it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work better, well, you don't do it again. If it does work better, well, you carry on with it.
Yeah.
That happens as you're going along.
Because there's a real strong element of construction in your work, isn't there? They are
a huge, yeah. What I tend to tell people when they're asking me about my work is that a large part of my work is problem solving.
Mm.
I haven't got anybody to tell me how to do it. There's nobody really to discuss it with locally. So a large part of what I do is problem solving. How can I do this? And so many people bring in bits and pieces that they will think projects that they want done. And I go, yeah, I can do that. And then when they go, I go, oh no. How am I going to get around this one? And invariably what you do is you give them a price thinking that, oh, yeah, that won't be too hard. So you give them a price, they go away, then you start looking at it, and it's like, what am I going to do here? And what should take a day sometimes takes 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And if you price it out at a day's work, it gets...
Yeah.
Then there'll be other times when you can do something that doesn't really take that much time, but it's a little bit different or whatever, and people are quite happy to pay. Yeah, I enjoy making the helmets because it's my concept, like design. It's based on, they are, both of the main helmets that I make are based on authentic styling helmets. I'd made one as a trial one when I was at Polytech, and I made a matching pair for a lady for who had a replica MG.
Yeah.
And then didn't sort of think about it again. And then we got offered a job up here in, well, it was in Greytown, so we relocated back to Greytown.
Yeah.
And that job only lasted 6 months, and I was unemployed again. I thought, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll try these out. And that's what we started doing, was making the helmets and marketing them to the vintage car market, but it's sort of gone wider than that. So many people, for so many reasons, are wearing the helmets.
Yeah.
And
they're incredible looking things.
People say, don't you get sick of making them? And I was like, well, no, not really.
No.
And I never really have got sick of making them.
But I'm looking at one, and I know your one of your reference points is steampunk.
Yeah.
And there's an incredibly looking steampunky helmet over there with kind of go faster stripe on top and inbuilt goggles. I mean, it's just fabulous.
I did that in conjunction with a guy at Weta Workshop, because I was at Weta Workshop for just over 12 months.
Yeah.
And I loaned them one. I'd made a helmet which was quite steampunky, and to put in a exhibition that they were taking over to Switzerland for a There's a book that they put out called Gordbort, which Greg Broadmoor writes and illustrates. He's a really clever guy.
Mm.
And a show went over to Switzerland, and I loaned them the helmet, and it was sort of like a metallic metal looking helmet made up out of panels that had been, looked like they'd been riveted together.
Yeah.
And they had a little bit more to it. And every time I asked the guy from props where it was, he said, "Oh, I'm not sure, I'll check up for you." And the last I heard, it was in the USA.
Yeah.
The show. And he said, "Well, look, it's going to be easier if we just make another one." So I made the helmet and sent it down to him, and he put the fin on the top and the ear bits on.
Yeah.
Then another one of my friends said, "Why did you send it down there to get done? Because everything on there you could have done yourself." And I looked at it and I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
It sort of gave me a nudge in the right direction.
Right, I see.
Yeah. That sort of thing, somebody telling me that, or somebody saying, "Nah, you can't do that," are the two main things that will give me a bit of momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was at Polytech, the tutor down there that we had, he told me that I'd never be as good as a machinist because I wouldn't spend enough time on a sewing machine to develop the skills.
Right.
Oh, that was the best thing he ever said.
So you went away and developed
I just sewed. Right. Sewed and sewed and sewed.
Hand sewing or machine
sewing?
Both.
I enjoy hand sewing. It's pretty time consuming, but I do enjoy hand sewing.
It's mesmerising, isn't it, as well?
A little bit more difficult with leather, because you've got to punch the holes in first with a stitching awl.
Right.
But then I've seen some people that have been amazing. There was an old guy over in Aussie, and when he got going, he was just like a sewing machine.
Mm.
He'd hold the awl in one hand. You'd do it with two needles. He'd have the awl in one hand and the two needles.
Yep.
And it would be push the hole through with the awl, and then the needle, then the needle, then the hole, needle, needle. And he was just like a sewing machine when he got going.
God, wow.
But he'd done it for so long.
Yep.
And, yeah, he was pretty skilled.
Because some of the work you do is very intricate. I mean, I can imagine on a helmet you'd have to use quite a lot of hand sewing to kind of...
Helmets are all done on the sewing machine.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So what would you use hand sewing for mainly? What pieces?
I use it sometimes on belts.
Right.
Because I can use braided polyester, which is like 1 to 1.5 mils thick, which is quite heavy.
Yeah.
And I do pinstriping stitching on belts.
Right.
Using it. Only because I know a guy in America who's doing similar to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I asked him if anybody over there was doing pinstriping on belts, and he said, "Yeah, I have done myself," he said, "but I'd consider using a sewing machine cheating." Oh, okay. Yippee-i-o, yippee-i-o, ghost riders in the sky. At Polytech, you were supposed to. I went to Southland Polytech before it became Southern Institute of Technology, and you were supposed to do the first year you did all the mediums, the next year you were supposed to major in one and minor in another. I majored in leather studies, and I did a minor in 3D, which was essentially sculpture and jewellery, and fibre.
Right.
And sneaked in all the other classes. But the tutors let me sneak in the other classes because I was in my late 30s and I was on a mission.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the other students were in their late teens, early 20s, and they were there not knowing really what they wanted out of life and where they were going, and a lot of them were there just really to collect a student allowance.
So you were in your late 30s when you went to study.
Yeah.
So what were you doing before that?
I've sort of done a variety of jobs, mostly paint or that related. I worked a lot of time during my school holidays in places like design companies or sign companies. I worked for a big commercial sign company making road signs when I was at college. Right. And then they offered me a job spray painting. So I went there, left school, went there spray painting. But I only stayed there for, like, at that stage, 3 months, because I then scored an apprenticeship working for a sign writer in Porirua.
Right.
But that didn't sort of pan out. So I gapped it from there back to the Wairarapa and worked as a car painter for, well, a labourer for a car painter for about 18 months, then went to the AA and ran their sign department for 7 years. That's a bit of a learning curve.
Yep. In what respect?
Well, we had a huge area, and a lot of stuff I had to actually work out myself. Signage was quite simple to do.
Yeah.
But they were actually using, really at that stage, it was new technology with the reflective signs that hadn't been around for that long. You had to bone up on, you couldn't just put a sign up anywhere, you had to work that all out. Work with ministry, at that time it was the Ministry of Works and all the district councils and boroughs. But then I left there and joined the police, which was the craziest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Because it really was trying to push a square peg into a round hole.
So how old would you have been when the police phase came along?
24.
Okay.
I was just, being honest,
yeah,
it was a case of me trying to be normal or growing up, or sort of like, as responsible as I could be.
Right, yeah.
And I enjoyed the trying to help people side of it.
Yeah.
I didn't like a lot of what went on. Mm. We went down to Gore, which was real eye-opener, because the first winter we were there was 7 hoar frosts in a row.
Wow.
And I've never worn so many layers of clothes in all my life. But then, you know, you got, like most Southlanders and people from Otago, you sort of adapt.
Yeah.
And you just know that you're going to have a crappy winter.
Rug up.
Yeah. The only thing you pray for is that you might have a good summer. So you get used to that, and it was a great place to bring the kids up. They were into all sorts of sports, and but then got offered I went to Polytech. I had a back injury which sort of put me out of the police, but that was, to me, that was like, it was good. And the way that it gave me a release to get out of the police. Otherwise I was still felt like I was trapped. But you know, the difference in thinking was that when I was at Polytech, I went back to the police station for a social function twice, and the conversation would go, oh, so what are you doing? Oh, I'm at Polytech. Oh, yeah, what are you studying? Craft design. Huh. What are you going to do when that's finished? Are you going to get a job? Or are you going to get a real job? And I was like, oh, no, I should be a self-sufficient craftsperson when I finish. Oh, okay. That was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, they shuffle off.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, no. Get the I.O. Get the I.A. Ghost riders in the sky.
Now, I know that you had your helmets featured in the King Kong movie.
Yeah.
What was that experience like working with a...
Well, with King Kong, I actually didn't spend any time working with him. Wardrobe and the designer heard about me or found me on the internet or somewhere.
Yeah.
And they rang up and said they were coming over.
Yeah.
And they were looking at buying one, maybe two helmets for the movie.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I've got one. So I jumped out of bed really early that morning and made sure I had others done for them. So that when they got here, they would be made. There's more chance of selling something if it's made in here than if they've got to come back for it. And they were quite keen because it was the right look.
Yep.
And the other helmets that are flying around in the biplanes in the movie.
Yeah. You went to see the film, did you? And
no.
You did. You haven't seen the film?
No.
You've never... Oh.
No, I haven't seen the movie.
My goodness, because I was going to ask you. Well, you were immensely proud when you saw your helmets all over the screen. But
no, I haven't seen the movie King Kong, but I worked at where the for over 12 months on The Hobbit.
So you were employed by Weta Workshops for The Hobbit? Or?
Nobody gets employed by Weta Workshop like that anymore. Right. What happens is you subcontract to them.
Yeah.
You're working for yourself, but for them. They've got the facilities. You go in as a subcontractor and you... And that means that if there's no work tomorrow, they'll say, well, sorry, there's no work tomorrow.
Were you involved in making things on your own or were you working in collaboration with others?
Generally speaking, what happened was they'd come in with a image from a designer and give you the image and what they called a mandrel, and in other words, a dummy or a blade or whatever, and go, make this sheath.
Right, so you were working on the swords and...
Not making the swords, but making the leather, sheaths and scabbards and quivers and working on the armour and helmets and...
Wow.
But you would get an image and you had to make it, and you had to make it like was in the image, which was generally just a drawing.
Yeah.
And then they would... drop another mandrel on you and go, okay, now we want a 80%. So you then had to reproduce that image exactly 80% of the original.
Right.
And then they
in terms of scale.
Yeah.
Right, I see.
And then they would maybe want a hero version, which would be bigger, 110%.
A hero version, I like that.
Well, yeah, but they have stunt double props as well as, you know, it's... But... The thing that tickled my fancy was everything was made perfect.
Yeah.
Like it was brand new.
Yeah.
And then aged.
Oh, I see.
So...
You had an aging department or...
Well, no, it's just part and parcel of the props department, you know. Because it would be brand new to start with.
Mm.
And then it would age, so it was aged accordingly to fit in.
And were you under a considerable time pressure with this work?
There was. Yeah. I didn't have the same because I only worked 3 days. When... It was the third time of asking that I went down there. First time I was working in Graydon at that stage, and they were just sort of getting it going, the rings, the movies. But Peter Jackson didn't get the funding he wanted, so everything went on hold for 6 months.
Right.
And so I just carried on doing what I was doing. And the second time of asking, I was busy putting together an exhibition, and... So I couldn't really drop that to go and work for them for, it was only at that stage looking at a couple of weeks. But I mean, that in hindsight, that probably could have developed into something bigger.
Yeah.
And then with The Hobbit, I got a ring from the team leader. Because I met and knew the team leader from he was involved in leather, but he was working with another company that I sort of knew in Wellington. And so I did know him.
Yeah.
And he offered me a job. He said, oh, do you want to come work for us? I said, when, Matt? Yes. Oh, when can you? I said, well, I'm doing some stuff at the moment, probably in another month. Oh, that would suit us fine. Okay. How many days do you want me for, Matt? Well, 5 would be good. Oh, 2 would be good. How about we do 3? Yeah, okay. So I worked 3 days. Oh, so I was driving over, leaving here at 5:30 in the morning, and worked through till 6. The day went from 8 till 6.
Yeah.
And then I'd leave there at 6 and drive back. I'd get here back here about 7:30 at night.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a
long day. Yeah.
14-hour day.
Yeah.
For 3 days, and then trying to carry on with my own work.
Yeah.
As well. But then there were others. Oh man, they would work through to like 4 o'clock in the morning to hit deadline, and they'd be up again back at work at 8 o'clock.
Oh man.
But they're walking around with their eyes sort of held open with matchsticks, literally just a bit. But a deadline's a deadline, and when you've got as much invested in it, and that is what Peter Jackson and Weta Workshop had.
Yeah.
Then, you got to make the deadlines because it's big dollars.
Yeah, that's right.
So a lot of them did work those crazy hours.
Yeah, yeah. And has any other film work been on the cards?
The nature of Weta Workshop is they don't really ever just work on one thing at a time.
No.
They can't really, so they... they had a movie that was being made in America, Elysium, which is made by the same director that did another sci-fi movie, District 9.
Oh, yeah.
And did a lot of work on the costume for that.
And what's next for you? Have you got any big projects coming up, or are you just...
Yeah, well, I've been working hard at, as I say, work hard at developing work, thanks to my website. But I've got two helmets at the moment where, once they're paid for, one's going to, as I say, one's going to Florida.
Yep.
And one's going to Australia. The other side of working hard to create work, I sort of have blocked in a bit of a year.
Mm-hmm.
I've just had an exhibition here, and that's, I've already started working on that for next year, which is going to be bigger and better. We had 80 bikes do a Rolling Thunder into town.
Oh, yeah.
And we're looking at building on that and making it a bigger ride, a bigger exhibition, involved a couple of motorbike builders, a couple of tattooists will be tattooing there.
Fabulous.
And some of my work, some of their work, some of the motorbike work.
Great.
And we're going to take over the front of the event centre.
Yeah.
And so that's for February next year. We've got the Wairarapa Summer Rally, which is a motorbike rally, which both my wife and I have sort of been involved. We started with the first one, then just had the second one this year. The first one, there was 90 bikes. The second one, we had over 300 bikes. So there's that. But I've also locked in a few other shows. I've just been to Palmerston North for the Need for Speed show, which was all custom cars and dragsters and motorbikes.
Right.
And that was to raise funds for the Master the Motorplex for the dragway. And that was a bit of a hoot. Yep. And I've had networking from that. I've actually had it, got a, people sort of looking at getting stuff built now, and I'm on other websites and Facebook things.
Brilliant.
There's another big show that we go to, Palmerston North Hot Rod Swap Meet and Car Show. That's at Manfield. And then October, for some reasons, kicking in, there's Steampunk Athicon Steampunk Convention in Wellington.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds exciting.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's a cracker. And there's a vintage car swap meet that same week, same month. And then we go November, same weekend as my birthday, is the New Plymouth New Zealand Tattoo and Art Show.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw.
Their brand. Now, you've also won awards as well for your stuff.
I have, yeah. I've entered six and I've got six.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're not in New Zealand, these are international?
One, but it was like an international conference, but it was one in New Zealand, and the rest of them have been either Australia or America.
Yeah.
I guess the flashiest one was this plaque for one up behind you there on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
That's Cowtown in America.
Yeah.
Cowtown is exactly that. It's like the heart of the leather and cow industry in America. And Billy Connolly stopped off there on his trip across America. But to have actually got an award there was a bit of a hoot. I won the section and then got best in category, which
fantastic.
I sort of thought was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they didn't know me from Adam. So it's not going on personalities, it's going on the quality of your work, which I enjoy.
And that must be, I mean, given that you do work a lot on your own, it must be quite important to, you know, those moments of validation must give you an idea that you're on the right track.
For me, it's a case of recognition from your peers.
Yeah.
And that's awfully important.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-i-oh! Faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught 'em yet. 'Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky. All the horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry. As a rider sloped on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways. If they are with us, you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Yippee-i-oh!